Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Unsafe working conditions in Texas. What Marty Walsh's Labor Department is doing about it. More college students who are working going union. And today on the show, the American Federation of Government Employees talking organizing and Roofers Local 37 out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Welcome to the Wednesday, January 19th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Spotify, and Stitcher. David Kahn is going to be our first guest on the show. He is the Director of Organizing at the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE.org. Many years a sponsor of the show. He's also a labor lawyer and union activist, and he is going to talk about the union's organizing plans for 2022. And if you listen last month to the show, which is archived on awfradio.com, we had Everett Kelly, the president of AFGE, talking about that, hinting on what they were going to do this year. Well, here's the deal. It's their new organizing strategy called Collective Power Now. And if you go to the website, you can read all about this. 4 years of an administration hostile to federal workers and labor unions have resulted in a hollowing out of not just federal agencies, but of AFGE's membership. Our union hit the highest membership ever in May of 2018, when our ranks swelled to 318,222. However, repeated attacks by the Trump White House and anti-worker political appointees at different fronts have resulted in our dues-paying membership dropping to roughly 290,000 today. So that's a drop of 30,000. Pretty significant. So, what's this new strategy? Well, with vaccines and the repeal of Trump's harmful executive orders by the worker-friendly Biden administration, there is light at the end of the tunnel. But AFGE says we have to act very, very quickly. Number one, immediately increase new member recruitment. Find a way to immediately add to a larger number of new members each month until we reach a break-even point where our adds and drops are equal, utilizing the techniques that we've used for 30 years. And we'll get into detail on that. What did they do over the last three decades that got their membership to almost 320,000, and what they need to do today? Number two here is organizing to build power. And we're going to cover as many of these as we can. Number one, learning how to talk about achieving results together through group power. Learning how to hold one-on-one organizing conversations to identify issues of common interest. Identifying a network of informal leaders throughout the bargaining unit. Using local text to members from the software to communicate, as well as social media. Online training for staff organizers and other staff. New online union orientation for potential members. Developing an app with a member's contact on it, as well as links to other information that's of importance to the member. This is all contained on their website, afge.org. And our guest, David Kahn, is going to run all of that down, talk about the strategy, their goals for this year. And now's the time. Now's the time. You got the right guy in the White House. You got changes. Well, you got changes in the NLRB. That doesn't affect government workers. But you have the Federal Labor Board, and it's my understanding there's some more changes on that, which will be more worker-friendly down the road. John Flatt will be joining us later in the show. He comes to us from Roofers Local 37 out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He's been a union journeyman roofer for 25 years, a foreman for about 15. Also, the union's business manager, financial secretary, treasurer for the past 2 years. Our website is rooferslocal37.com. We'll talk about recruitment and training, what he sees for work for this year and next. Go to their website. Talks about the job of roofing. This is not an easy job. And they point out that the work is done outdoors in all kinds of weather. That's right, all kinds of weather. Except when it's a blizzard. Obviously, they're not going to work in something like that. But bottom line, a union roofer does a great deal of climbing, kneeling, standing, walking in high places. If you don't like that, you can't be a roofer. No. And you also have the danger of falling on any given day. A union roofer should have no fear of height, good sense of balance, better than average sense of safety for himself and his coworkers. They should enjoy working with their hands and accept working outdoors, even when it's lousy outside. And a little history on the roofers here. The International Slate and Tile Roofers Union of America was chartered by the American Federation of Labor. This is long before it was the AFL-CIO. June 5th, 1903. International Brotherhood of Composition Roofers, Damp and Waterproof Workers received their AFL charter on November 6th of 1906. In 1919, the organizations met in Pittsburgh. They merged to form the United Slate Tile and Composition Roofers, Damp and Waterproofer Workers Association. They merged. The merged union grew from 1,600 members to more than 7,000 by World War II. And then after the war, everything boomed with the baby boomers. And steady growth marked the 1950s. By 1978, the union had 28,000 members. And it was during that year the union adopted its new name, United Union of Roofers, Waterproofers, and Allied Workers. And that's their name today. A little labor history on behalf of roofers. And again, John Flatt will be joining us from Local 37 out of Pittsburgh. U.S. Department of Labor's Occupational Safety and Health Administration has found that the U.S. Department of Interior's Bureau of Land Management, mind you, violated procedures for safe handling of chemical materials at its Cliffside Helium Enrichment Unit in Amarillo, Texas. OSHA issued the facility 21 notices of unsafe working conditions. This, by the way, is OSHA's first use of the egregious violation policy in citing unsafe working conditions at a federal facility. The violations would carry a private sector penalty of $1,023,987. Now, that's what it would be in the private sector. I could only assume that's what's going to happen here. You got the federal government violating worker safety here. Interesting. Here's the deal. OSHA found the Bureau of Land Management's Cliffside Helium Enrichment Unit willfully and repeatedly failed to take required safety measures to ensure the facility's compliance with federal safety and health procedures and to protect employees from chemical production hazards. That comment from Doug Parker. Doug's the Assistant Secretary of Labor for Occupational Safety and Health. He went on to say federal employers, just like private sector employers, are responsible for knowing what hazards exist in their facilities and taking appropriate precautions to keep their workers safe. Turns out that six willful safety violations include failing to train workers to understand the purpose and function of the energy control program. And then there were five egregious willful violations for failing to perform inspections and tests on process equipment. So once again, Marty Walsh's Labor Department on the move trying to keep workers safe. Student workers at Dartmouth College are seeking voluntary recognition by the school. Reina Santoro is a junior who works in a campus cafe, and she said that COVID protocols like masking and plexiglass barriers were not always followed, leaving her to feel, quote, like you're not cared for at all by the college. And then there's sophomore Alejandro Morales, who works nearly 20 hours a week as a dining manager. Morales said that many of the student workers are first-generation college students who use money from their part-time jobs to help cover living expenses. Now, the student workers did win hazard pay earlier in the month, but they don't know how long they're going to have it. In other news, student workers of Columbia, a union of instructors, researchers, and teaching assistants, this is in Columbia University, announced that they have reached a tentative agreement for their first contract with the school. How about that? The union and the school have been bargaining for 3 years. 3 years! And the union went on a 10-week strike in the process of reaching that agreement. It's never easy, is it? According to reporting by The Athletic, Major League Baseball is planning to resume negotiations with the Players Association, the Players Union, and the league is preparing new proposals to send to the players. Now, if the MLB manages to deliver their proposals this month, as it intends, it will mark the first time that owners and players have communicated since the lockout began in December. As the publication notes, however, if the NBA provides an example in which labor disputes are typically not resolved until the ultimate moment, there should be little reason for optimism over these talks. You know how it goes. They wait to the last minute. The objective of a lockout is to impose economic pressure on the workers. That would be the players, which, of course, is effective only to the extent the workers are actually feeling the financial pinch. And MLB players are not paid during the offseason. So, in other words, the lockout will likely become increasingly onerous and effective as the season begins, which is just what? Maybe 2 months away. You've got training that starts in February. So we'll see what happens here. That's definitely one to watch. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about organizing on behalf of the American Federation of Government Employees.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange. News, talk, sports, and workforce politics. The fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. We had the president of the OFT on the show yesterday, Melissa Cropper. Do check that show out, and she talks about what the OFT is doing. They're partnered with the American Federation of Teachers to get young people to read. And, in fact, the Ohio Federation is donating 40,000 books to various schools in the state of Ohio, and they're urging other federations, state federations, to do the same. So do check that out. That would be at awfradio.com. Let's go to Washington right now. Welcome back to the show. Haven't had this gentleman on for a while. His name is David Kahn, and he's the director of organizing on behalf of one of our sponsors. That would be the American Federation of Government Employees, and they are on a mission this year. Hey, David Kahn, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today, brother?
Wonderful. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So how long have you been director of organizing at the union?
I have been with the organizing department for just about a year. We've been doing a bunch of exciting work in that time, and it's been an absolute blast.
And with the American Federation of Government Employees, how many years?
9 years. Before that, I was with the bargaining and education department.
Okay. Yeah, I see you're a labor lawyer as well as a union activist, so this is the show to be on. Let's talk about organizing. I was reading about what happened in the last couple of years under the Trump administration. It was brutal, not just in the public sector, but the private sector as well. And I see some of your membership kind of faded away. And obviously, you're on a mission for this year. So talk to me. What's the strategy here, David?
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate the question. We're in a pretty interesting posture and responding to it in a sort of interesting way. AFGE is, at its core, an organizing union. We have, leading up into the Trump administration, seen 27 years of straight growth, which is unprecedented throughout the AFL and Change to Win. It's a record that we're proud of, and I think represents the fact that we're growth-minded. But when the Trump administration hit, they had the opportunity to get under the hood for our collective bargaining agreements and our union rights in a way that they didn't for private sector and public sector unions. They could flip some switches by signing executive orders that really allowed them to take a tax against federal workers and their rights on the job in a way that was unique. And when they did that, they ripped away the union space from the offices that we had. They gutted collective bargaining agreements. Not just relying on their ability to change the law, but broke the law in a number of instances, and just put us on our heels. And a lot of the time that our union brothers and sisters spent organizing wound up being spent fighting to regain their ability to have representation rights in the workplace. And pursuant to that, our membership began to drop. And we're a huge union, represent over 700,000 federal employees. And pursuant to that, we have about 3,500 folks that retire every year. So in mm-hmm. order to maintain the power and density that we have in the workplace, we have to be bringing in 3,500 new folks a year, or a month. And so our membership began to decline, which is not to be surprised. You know, folks were still interested, but we didn't have the time to engage in the outreach that we had in the past. And our union took unprecedented action by instituting a new organizing plan called the Now Organizing Plan. It's a two-phase plan. We've completed the first phase, which is exciting, and we're pivoting to the second. And the idea was, the first one was just to get back to recruiting, get folks back into the union, let folks know that the doors were open and that we were in the business of building power. And we've done that. Our numbers plateaued and we're back to growth. We actually had some of the best years we've had in 3 years in recent months, even before the Trump administration's attacks were in full and the pandemic really knocked us back on our heels. But the second phase is the one that we're entering into now, which is a little bit more interesting, where we're ch- changing the model of organizing we're doing and changing the model of union that we are and as a result of that. A lot of conversations that union folks, good unions, our union oftentimes have had with people in the past is, you know, you can't afford not to have a labor union. You wouldn't not have health insurance. You don't know if you're going to get sick. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't not have car insurance. It's against the law, and you don't know if you're going to have an accident. You would not have job insurance. You never know when you're going to need the ability to be represented. And that was not always, but oftentimes the pitch we made. And what we've discovered, at the Federation, the change we're making, is that that message doesn't do what we need it to do for the type of growth and the type of power building we want to be doing, we need to be doing, because it makes folks think that the union isn't them. It makes them think that the union is a union officer or a staffer or some other person that will make change for them. And while there, we do have great officers and we've got great staff, I'm pleased to say I count myself amongst their number. The thing that makes real power is having people be involved in their job, having a voice on the job, being engaged. And so the message we have and the type of organizing we do is changed. You know, it's not just inviting people to join and letting them know that they've got fighters in their corner. It's getting people involved based around the things that they care about and making sure that from the moment they sign, from the moment they consider signing, they know that there's a role for them to be involved for building power, whether that's signing petitions, whether that's going to rallies, whether that's finding a place in doing some representational or organizing or communications work themselves in their local, and building ground up based on the issues and the concerns that every single member and potential member has. And it's been absolutely transformational.
When you say it's transformational, do you have any data to quantify that? I mean, it sounded like things have plateaued. You've been gaining members for 27 years. Just to recap here, Trump comes in, everything grinds to a halt. And I like your analogy too. Like they got under the hood, and I think they took the engine out. I think exactly what happened there. I mean, and then there was a downward spiral. But it sounds like you've turned it all around in really a record amount of time here. Where are you now? What have you done so far to gain members? How many? Do we have numbers on that?
We are at a point now where we are, in your average month, either growing or steady. But what we've seen also comprised of different districts we've got that are sort of like states that are constituent parts. Every district that we have has seen more than 50% increases in the growth that they've had month over month since the beginning of 2021. Many of those, you know, the last time we've crunched numbers had their best months the time that we looked. Some have seen over 300% increases from where they were in January. So as we measure our success from where we were at the point when the plan was instituted, we're seeing real significant changes. And we've seen some of our locals have months where, you know, they're adding, you know, 20% increases to their numbers. So as we aggregate it, we're seeing that it's put us in a position of health and steady growth. In the long term, but as we look really in the individual spaces, we're seeing dynamic and fascinating growth.
That's awesome. How many people do you got working on this, David? I know you're the director of this. How many make up your team?
That's a great question. We've got about 35 folks on the organizing team, and we have been talking to the entire. We've had several all staff calls, saying, you know, talking about how. Because as you change the model of organizing that you're doing, you're changing what representation looks for everybody. So we've been getting the entire staff and all of the local leaders on board in any way we can. We have monthly calls to talk about this. We've been releasing a bunch of training materials to talk about, you know, the way organizing can look and if we do it differently. And so ultimately, we're trying to get everybody on board with it. We've got staff of 200 trying to get them all doing it. We've got over 2,000 local leaders. We're trying to get them involved in it. And a part of the idea is, if your issues that you're addressing in the representation work you're doing and the lobbying advocacy work you're doing in the contract negotiations you're doing always comes from one-on-one conversations with the rank and file membership, then the things you're going to be changing are going to be more granular in nature. You're going to be addressing every little thing that happens, and they're going to be necessarily easier to get people involved in direct action, in, you know, mobilization. And so everything we do is changed by moving to a more engaged and member-based organizing model. So while you know, all 35 of us in the organizing department are hustling as hard as we can to get this work done, this change has involved everybody in the Federation.
That's incredible. Do you have a goal in mind, a number? I read on your website you're at 290,000 members. All right, it's January 2022. Where do you want to be at the end of the year? $500,000. How's that sound?
It's funny you say that. I think that's a number I've heard bandied about, and I think that is achievable. And I'll tell you why. The work we're doing does not, well, it again, is not going to be staff driven. You've got the full commitment of staff and really want to see this succeed and see this go to be the way we conduct business overall. But if it's going to work, it's got to be the members knowing that they're the ones that have the power of making the change, that the Federation belongs to every single member, that the ability to get people involved, that the ability to do the work is something that rests with the members of this union. And knowing that you have power on the job is a transformational experience. It changes who you are when you're talking to your boss. It changes who you are when you're thinking about the terms and conditions of employment you have. It changes who you are when you're thinking about the types of things, the horizon of where things can be better at work.
Right.
And we have been working feverishly to make sure that every single member knows that they can have these conversations to share the power with their coworkers.
Yeah.
And that sort of exponential growth is possible and is only possible when everybody's got a chance to help be a part of the change.
We all have power. Put it all together, then we really have power. I like that. I like that a lot. David, I got to take a quick break. You can stay with us for another segment here on the show. Can we do that?
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
David Kahn is his name, and he is the organizing director for the American Federation of Government Employees, and they are making a difference in organizing. We'll get into some specifics next. Later in the show, John Flatt will be joining us on behalf of Roofers Local 37 out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, we're available on 6 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. When you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always like those 5-star ratings, so keep them coming. David Kahan is our guest today, our premier guest on behalf of the American Federation of Government Employees, proud sponsor of America's Workforce, AFGE.org. And if you go to the website, you can find out what they're doing about their new organizing strategy, Collective Power Now. And they're having results. David, I want to talk about, and actually, it's two parts. Number one is to immediately increase new member recruitment and organizing to build power. And there's a lot of components to this. And obviously, as you indicated in the first segment, it's working. We're talking about group power. But here's what I'd like to expand on. Learning how to hold one-on-one organizing conversations to identify issues of interest. I think that speaks volumes because we're talking about connecting with people. And maybe you could even give an example here. Like, hey, I'm Ed Flash Ferentz, and I just I got a job at the federal government, and you want me to join the union. I mean, how does that work? You have a team of people that are trying to recruit new members. Maybe you can spell that out for our listeners. Go ahead.
That is a wonderful question. I really appreciate it. So what, there is a wealth of science, not just the experience throughout the labor movement, because one-on-one conversations are the foundation of that work. But there's a wealth of science backing the fact that there is a deeper psychological connection between the issues and concerns that people have and how their engagement and involvement can be the solution working through the union, and the way that it sticks, that from one-on-one conversations that makes it critical. There's a lot of research in the pedagogical field for education where they say, you know, when you're just talking at someone, when you're lecturing, when you're showing them media, when you're, you know, reading a book, if you're doing anything to somebody, an adult, sharing information with them that way, they're going to get about 20-25% of that over the long run. Okay. Which is a part of why actually in adult education people repeat themselves a lot. But if somebody is doing the work, they're coming to their own conclusions, they're connecting the dots themselves, the way that information sticks with them, the way the matrix of that information solidifies in their mind is stronger. And so there is a part of the one-on-one conversation that is alchemy, that is critical, that is a scientific process that is necessary, where after you introduce yourself and talk to the person, you know, say, hi, my name is Dave, your coworkers are interested in starting a union, or your coworkers are interested in building power on the job, can you tell me a little bit about it? You ask somebody to tell you about their job, and good union organizing, a good one-on-one conversation, 70% listening, 30% talking, 80% listening, 20% talking on behalf of the organizer. Mm-hmm. So you get the person to talk about what their experience is. And in that conversation, they're going to be talking about what works and what doesn't, and really examining their job and their experience and thinking about the things that have gone on for some time that are not meeting their needs, that are unfair, that are untenable, and realizing that, no, there is something that needs to be fixed. There is something that going on at work that I'm not willing to endure anymore. And what that is changes from person to person, even in workplaces that have very serious problems. And we've discovered this during the pandemic. We discovered this during the Trump administration when the attacks on workers were extraordinary. That the things that matter to each person are unique. It may be the fact that they don't have a parking lot that's safe to go to at night when they go to their car. It may be that they have a supervisor that rides them in a way that is unfair. It may be the fact that they've got a vacation bid process that is unequal and that it's got favorites. And, you know, even though there's a pandemic raging and they're all brought together by that issue, the thing that moves that person to action, the thing that makes that person say, no, this is intolerable, I need change, is individual. Mm-hmm. It's always going to change. So the conversation is listening to that person talk and saying, well, tell me about that. Do you think that's fair? How long has that been going on? Are you, you know, is that something you're willing to put up with? And at that point, saying, well, how do you think that changes? Because fundamentally, the truth about the workplace, the modern workplace in America, is the only way to affect meaningful change for yourself and your coworkers,
mm-hmm,
is by making change through a union, by changing the terms and conditions of employment through a collective bargaining agreement, you know, changing what's in the contract, by engaging in collective action. good bosses come and go. Their willingness to listen to what we do is a caprice. It could change at any time, and they can be replaced at any time. The thing that you can count on, the thing that you can build on, the thing that you can be sure will stand under your feet is labor union. And when folks are examining the concerns they have, there's not a lot of education or discussion you need to do in that organizing conversation for them to get there. They'll usually understand that. And at that point, that connection builds, and it's indelible. And they understand the path from the things they need to see changed as an individual in the workplace, in a personal way, the most personal way. And the path to change is getting involved in the union. And then there's something called calling the question. You just say, are you willing to make a change about that? You've told me that, the way your boss treats you is intolerable. You've told me that you do not feel safe going to your car at night. If that's something you're willing to put up with, or are you willing to make a change about it right now? Mm-hmm. And then you invite people to join. But it doesn't end there, and it can't ever end there. The next thing is getting them involved. So, we're having a meeting on Tuesday. We need you to come. We're passing out flyers. We're talking to your coworkers. We're signing this petition. We're marching on the boss. We're having a rally. We're putting signs in the windshields of our car out in front of where the public goes into the agency. We need them to see the message that we care about, and getting them engaged. And that is crucial. That is the rock center of what we're building. And that is the one-on-one conversation that has affected change everywhere we've done it.
I'm reading too that you're using the technology, and there's so much available, and there's an app. I guess you're trying to develop. Maybe you've done that already, where you can communicate with the member day in and day out, even off the job as well. I mean, the closer you get to the member, obviously, the better it is. Have we gone to that stage yet, David?
Yeah, we have. We've got this big customer relations management system, CRM. It's similar to some of your audience that does this work may be familiar with Action Builder or VAN. It's similar to that. It's called Broad Stripes. It's been built largely to our specs and is truly incredible. And what it does is it allows us to have real-time data that we've collected on the membership of every of all of the locals that are working with us on this program on Broad Stripes to see where their members are in the workplace, where they're not, where their potential members are in the workplace, and to track not only folks' personal information based on publicly collectible data, but also track people's engagement in the union. So we can see, as we've had escalating campaigns where we're asking people to get involved, what folks have had a chance to do and who we can have reach out to them, understanding where people are in their shifts, in the workplace, seniority, and be able to reach out to different constituencies to get different messages out to keep people engaged. And we can send personalized messages to people on their text message, on their email. We can phone bank from it and have ongoing conversations with all of our members based on how they're situated and the issues that they're facing in a constant way. And that level of engagement and conversation has been a game changer.
I could only imagine there was a lot of buy-in to this. And you mentioned, David, in the first segment that there are some locals that saw a 300% increase in membership. Did I hear that correctly?
Well, we have seen that on a few occasions. The way I was describing the metric, and I apologize if I was unclear, was that when we measure the growth month over month that we've seen from where folks were when we implemented the plan, they're seeing more than three times the growth they were then. But yeah, there are locals that have changed that drastically. We have because what we've discovered is I suspect this is the case with a lot of unions. All of our locals are really different in their composition. So we've got, smaller locals that are powerhouses that are tripling in size. We have giant locals that are, making huge gains, but they were closer to full saturation and the density that they have with hires. So the way we're trying to measure success is by their ability to grow on a month by month level. But yeah, we've seen any way you cut it, we've seen drastic success across the board on this. It's pretty exciting.
You know, you mentioned Trump and you mentioned the pandemic. And, you know, in a way, you got to thank Trump for ticking so many people off. And then you got the pandemic that made everybody kind of reevaluate work in general. You know, there's a lot of people leaving their jobs right now. But what a great time. And plus, you throw in Biden, you got a union-friendly guy in the White House. David, your timing couldn't be better on this. You know that.
It's very exciting. And a part of what's happening, and this is happening across the country, you know, we've got the highest approval ratings for labor unions across the board for folks that are in unions and those that aren't. And people are realizing that, you know, the American promise is a square deal. And it's not being provided uniformly. People, when they go to work, aren't getting a fair shake. They're not being treated in a way that is safe or provides dignity and respect in the workplace. And folks are almost to a person at a stage where when, you know, you come to them to have a conversation about building power, building, you know, granting equity, making sure that the workplace is the type of place they want to see, they're primed for it. They know that they're not getting the best of what they can out of their work situations everywhere you go. And the walk to having power of their own in the workplace is a short one.
All good stuff. You got to go to the website. Do check this out. AFGE's new organizing strategy, Collective Power Now. David Kahn joining us on the show today, Director of Organizing at the American Federation of Government Employees. All good stuff here. David, let's check in maybe toward the, I don't know, second half of the year, see how things are going. Any parting words for our audience right now?
There's never a better time than today to make change in your workplace.
There you go. All right, we'll leave it on that note. David Kahn from AFGE. We're going to take a quick break. We have the roofers and waterproofers out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
Hey, don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. Let's go to line number two and welcome to the show, John Flatt. John is the business manager, financial secretary, treasurer for the past 2 years for Roofers Local 37 out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. RoofersLocal37.com is their website. Hey, John, welcome to the show. How are we doing today, brother?
Pretty good. Good morning. How are you?
Good, 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 good. Union journeyman roofer for 25 years, foreman for 15 years. And as I just said, you're the business manager, financial secretary, treasurer. What got you in this line of work? This is not easy work. Talk to me about that part.
Actually, I started off as doing shingle roofs when I was a kid, and did that all through high school with a friend's dad, and actually went to college at University of Houston, Texas, and got a degree in computer science, but didn't see myself sitting behind a desk staring out a window all day long. So a few years went by, and a couple friends of mine I did some side work with, they were union roofers, and they suggested that I come to work with them. And so I did, and I've been here ever since.
That's an interesting transition from computer science and a degree in
yes.
computer science, and you go into roofing. That's pretty interesting there. So Local 37, give me some details. How many members, and what do you see down the road? I would imagine there's a lot of growth going on in that area.
Yeah, we have right now we're sitting at about right around 350 members. We have on average anywhere from 50 to 75 new apprentices every year. So, you know, as we're growing as a union, you know, our facility's getting fairly small. We're in a small building located just in the outer edge of Pittsburgh. So with COVID and everything kind of changed our training and how we look at our training. You know, with social distancing and stuff like that, we care a lot about our members and their families. And last thing we want to do is have somebody come in and get sick. Up till now, we've only had one instructor. And so we're currently looking to add three more instructors to our curriculum. And that way we can kind of social distance our classes out. Because in the past, we've had, you know, 30 guys in a class, and we just don't have the space capable of kind of keeping them spread out. So in that regards, we need to buy a new building.
I gotcha.
But finding something that's reasonably priced and a suitable location for us has been a little bit of an obstacle.
I would imagine so. Yeah, the price of everything has just skyrocketed here.
Oh, yeah. COVID definitely did not help that at all.
Yeah, COVID, too, with the training programs, I know a lot of them went virtual, and that's so difficult, too, especially when you're trying to learn about roofing. Now, can you explain that part? Did you do some of it virtual, or did you try to do it?
We didn't do any of it virtual.
None at all?
Because a lot of our training is hands-on.
Yeah,
so it's,
you
know, there's just no way we can do it virtually. So, like I said, we've actually split classes in half. You know, so we keep them numbers down low, and we can social distance while these guys are in classes and girls are in classes. So that it definitely has been a challenge, you know, to change things and how we look at our classes and taking care of our members.
You mentioned females. Do we
yes.
see more women getting involved in the roofing profession?
We do, actually. It's slowly kind of transitioning into where we're getting more women. Right now, we currently have three women that are union roofers, and they hold their own. Believe me, they're hard workers, and I wish I could get 20, 30 more of them.
They're probably showing up some of the guys, huh?
They are, actually. You'd be surprised, you know, whether you're a female or a male or whatever, they're good workers, you know. I'll tell you what. Yeah, in this line of work, there's not a lot of people want to be a union roofer. You know, we do big flat roofs on commercial and industrial buildings and stuff like that, and it's just not a sought-after career. You know, out in the hot sun in the middle of summer, in the freezing cold in the wintertime, you know, the elements really get the best of you. You got to be an outdoors person.
Yeah, you got to be really tough. I mean, the weather, especially in the northern climate, you got to – I mean, did you get part of this crazy snow that that hit on
yes.
Sunday night, Monday? Okay.
Yes, we did. We got about – down in Pittsburgh, we got about 8-9 inches. And then I live in Dayton, Pennsylvania, which is an hour north of Pittsburgh, and we got about 13 inches.
Yeah, that's definitely going to stall a few projects, no doubt about that.
Yeah, I mean, some of the guys kind of like it, though. It gives them a little bit of a break, kind of like a vacation in the wintertime.
Yeah, the elements are really, really difficult. John, I want to talk about the apprenticeship program. Can you give me some details on it? How many years? And as far as maybe give me some specifics on the training itself?
Well, our apprenticeship program has been around since, I think it's 1950. 50. Our union's been around, our personal union has been here since 1919, is when our union was formed. Our apprenticeship program runs, right now it's year-round, but we're in the process of changing it, so what we'll do is what they call block training. So the apprentices will get laid off in the middle of winter, like January, February, and they'll go to school for the whole month. Then their training's done for the whole year. That way it doesn't interfere with their work schedule. They don't have to miss work to come to training. It'll simplify everything.
What about the workload? And you know, with this infrastructure bill, I'm hearing that money should be trickling in shortly.
Yes.
There's got to be some good things happening. And your area, too, Pittsburgh area, has really come around. I mean, it was part of the Rust Belt, just like Cleveland, just like Detroit for so many years. But you got some pretty powerful leadership over there that have kind of turned things around. So with that being said, what's the future look like for roofers?
Right now, the future looks fantastic. You know, they're constantly building new buildings around in and around Pittsburgh area. With the all the computer companies that are popping up all over the place, they're building new big buildings and stuff, which is just giving our contractors a ton of work. You know, we even get some of our other roofers unions from Cleveland, as a matter of fact, and Canton, Ohio, and Philadelphia, Maryland, and stuff. They're actually coming into our area and doing some of our work, too, that we can't get to because we just have so much work. And that's where we're at now is recruitment is huge right now. That's what, like right now, I'm starting to do a recruitment campaign because I need guys and gals to come and, you know, learn this trade.
RoofersLocal37.com. Anybody listening right now, just go to that website. You might want to give John Flatt a call. John is the business manager, financial secretary, treasurer. He's had that position for the last couple of years. What about the non-union roofers? Is there, you know, a lot of competition going on in that area? I'm just wondering, what's the story?
Yeah, there is. There's quite a bit of competition, but a lot of them, they don't do the as big of a projects as we do. I mean, there's a few companies that do, but for the most part, we kind of keep them at bay. You know, my biggest thing is trying to get their workers. You know, that's where I've been getting a lot of guys is that non-union workers are transitioning into becoming union roofers because of the money difference, you know.
Right,
we're talking a huge pay increase, and the benefits are just phenomenal. You know, and your benefits aren't coming out of your check. They're added on top of the check.
I hear you. Why don't you tell our listeners right now the difference between a non-union roofer, and this is Pittsburgh, a non-union roofer and a union roofer? What's the difference in pay and benefits and that kind of thing?
Well, typically, right now my journeyman roofer makes $35.54 an hour plus his benefits. When you add the benefits on, he makes $53.42 an hour. From my local area, a non-union roofer doing the exact same job is making about $22 to $26 an hour, and they're paying for their benefits out of their own pocket.
There you go. The union difference. You said it all right there. All right, RoofersLocal37.com. Things are pretty bright in the Pittsburgh area. In fact, they're looking for people all through the Midwest right now. So those of you listening might want to go to that website, RoofersLocal37.com, and check in with John Flatt. John, any parting words here for our audience?
I just want to say that all the unions out there, just keep on, and believe in solidarity.
There you go. RoofersLocal37.com. All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, we got the latest from The Nation magazine. In fact, we're going to be checking in with an elementary school teacher out of Brooklyn, New York, talking about teaching conditions, not just in New York, but around the country, and the latest from the North Coast Labor Federation. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.